from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, and today for Mina Kim. And on this Veterans Day holiday weekend, we begin this hour with a story about long overdue recognition for a small group of vets. Last month, more than seven decades after the end of World War II, Filipino veterans who helped Americans fight the Japanese invasion of their islands were finally awarded the Congressional Gold Medal by House Speaker Paul Ryan. Here's part of what he said.
I don't have to tell you that this is a day that is long, long overdue. Everyone knows about Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941, but perhaps lesser known is that within hours, Japanese forces also invaded the Philippines. And under command of General MacArthur, American and Filipino forces fought side by side to stave off the invasion.
After the war, Filipino vets were stripped of benefits and denied equity pay until 2009, when the Obama administration awarded surviving veterans a small payment. But many veterans didn't even get those payments due to missing records. Joining me now to discuss their long struggle for recognition and the significance of this Congressional Medal of Honor is General Antonio Taguba, a retired Major General in the U.S. Army. And General, first of all, just remind us in a little bit more detail, what role did Filipinos play in those early years of the war?
Well, in July 26, 1941, President Roosevelt mobilized just about every organized military forces in the Philippines to be placed under the command of General MacArthur. And later on, after Bataan and Corregidor, guerrilla forces were also placed under his command. So we're talking about 260,000 men and women that defended the United States in the Philippines. As we should know our history, the Philippines was a commonwealth or territory of the United States.
And it was some brutal fighting as well, right?
Absolutely. Yes. When the Japanese forces captured 72,000 prisoners of war in Bataan and Corregidor, some 12,000 Filipinos and about 700 Americans died in that week-long march. And many more died in several prisoner of war camps. And most of the Americans were also placed on hell ships. And they were taken to Japan and also in China.
And during the war, before the war began, as the fighting was beginning, what was the understanding that Filipinos had from President Roosevelt in terms of, what their role would be and what would happen after the war?
Well, their role was defined on the military order that he issued, President Roosevelt issued, that they were to defend the United States. And the United States also existed in the Philippines. There was a promise that after the war that they will be paid and also provided for their benefits, just like American soldiers were provided their benefits. But the Rescission Act of 1946, as you had mentioned earlier, deemed that they were not to be on active duty, or they're not classified as on active duty. Therefore, that took away their benefits. And their U.S. nationality was also taken away from them, which meant that they were no longer U.S. citizens and were not to be afforded with any type of benefits, let alone any back pay that they deserved for just fighting the war and to defend their country.
And so it took many decades for that to get reversed. Of course, many Filipino vets had died by that time. Why do you think it took so long?
Well, history has never been good to a lot of people, let alone the Filipinos that defended their country. I think people have forgotten that the Rescission Act, which still is active today, has never been repealed. And they fought for that. I don't think that the American government, or even let alone Congress, would ever go back. I think time took its toll. And someone went after benefits, and some people went after citizenship and the like. But I think what they deserve was to be recognized, simply to be recognized. And that's why we pursued the Congressional Gold Medal, which came about when Congress passed it in November of 2016 and President Obama signed it into law.
Yeah.
That is a seminal historical point in time.
All right. Well, General Taguba, thank you so much for filling us in on the history. Congratulations on winning this battle and getting the recognition for these vets that they deserve. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're very welcome. Thank you, and happy Veterans Day.
Happy Veterans Day to you and all veterans as well. And joining me now in the studio, two women who have been very involved in this struggle. Lou Tancinco is board president of the San Francisco Veterans Equity Center, which served some of the local Filipino World War II veterans. She was also at the gold medal ceremony in D.C. Welcome to you.
Thank you for having me, Scott.
And also here in the studio is Cecilia Garland. She's executive director of the Bataan Legacy Historical Society, and you too were at that ceremony in Washington. Thanks to you as well for being here.
Thank you, Scott.
And let me begin with you, Lou, if I could. Just tell me, what was that ceremony like?
Well, it was highly emotional, not just for the veterans, but for us who have been fighting for this veterans' cause for many decades already. And it was a moral victory, so it's something to be to celebrate. But at the same time, you also feel the sadness because you don't see a lot of the veterans that we have served in the past, especially those who were deserving, the survivors of Bataan Death March. They were not there to witness it. It took so long. And so that moment was very unforgettable. It is something that we have to share to the next generation that this shouldn't happen again. This should have happened right after the war. They should have been recognized. They should have been treated correctly.
And as we say, there are so many of the veterans have died or were unable to make the ceremony, but there were some who were there.
Yeah.
What did they say?
Well, most of those who were there were really happy, and they were so proud. There's a lot of pride in just receiving the replica bronze medal. For some who are very weak, they were in a wheelchair. I don't think they know what was going on. They were just smiling. There was like a sense of submission on their part. Maybe, yes, I'm being recognized right now. It is very sad because as a board president of Veterans Equity Center, we work so hard for this day, for them to be recognized. And we've seen them in their moments where they were aggressive. We've seen them in their moments.
In their prime.
Yeah, in their prime. And they wanted this recognition, but didn't see it.
Yeah. Cecilia Garland, what would you add to that? Sort of a bittersweet description there from Lou Tancinco.
It was highly emotional, especially, you know, for myself. My father, Luis, was in the Bataan Death March, and he passed away 3 years ago. And and I wish he were with me during that ceremony, but sad to say, he passed on. But there are other, you know, like last week, as you said, Mr. Ramon Regalado, who's 100 and a half years old
living
now,
in the East Bay.
Who lives in El Cerrito, yes.
Dan Brecky, talked with him from
yes,
KQED.
Mm-hmm, and he said, it is very important for him because for so long he had been waiting for this recognition, and he thought all these years that they had been forgotten. So this is very seminal. It's very important for them, for those who are still around, of course.
What did your father tell you about the Bataan Death March? Because it's really one of those things that is taught in the history books, but on the other hand, I'm not sure people understand the role that Filipino.
Actually, you know, it's just going to be taught. It was approved for inclusion World War II in the Philippines last year, approved by the California State Board of Education for the Grade 11 U.S. History Curriculum Framework, Chapter 16.
So it was left out also of the history books.
Yes, yes. And in the Philippines, it's not being taught. I think they only mention it in one paragraph, but it's not being taught. And this is the greatest legacy of the Filipinos.
Why is it overlooked there?
I am not sure. Probably economics or political. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's not being taught. But there is such a great interest among school teachers to teach this because the kids are so hungry to learn their identity, to learn of what their ancestors did during the war. But in answer to your question, my father, the way he told us the stories when we were growing up, it was like a cowboy story. He made light of it. And it was only probably in 2011 when I read a document from the infantry school in Fort Benning, Georgia, describing their experiences, the experiences of the 41st Infantry Regiment during the war. And I just sobbed when I read this document. And when I asked him, he broke down. And this is a typical reaction of the veterans.
What did they experience that was so horrible?
Well, they were put on half rations early January, January 5.
Of
1941. So the war started not even a month after the war started. So by March, they were on quarter rations. Majority of the men were suffering from major disease and starvation. So that by April, by the way, April 3 was the beginning of a massive bombardment by air. By the way, they didn't fight with air support because air support was destroyed during the first week. So they were all part of the U.S. Army forces in the Far East. And so a lot of them were suffering from disease and starvation when they were forced to surrender. General Edward P. King Jr. was forced to surrender them because he didn't want any more bloodshed. And so there was massive bombing. They had no ammunition. By the way, their ammunition dated back to World War I, so that 50% of the ammunition and equipment were duds.
Hmm. And Lieutenant Cinco, what would you add to that and in terms of what these men experienced, but also how they experienced it when they came back here and when they came to the U.S. and they lived here for decades? I mean, mm-hmm. you know, these men are called the silent generation in many
yes.
ways. They don't talk about what happened. What are some of the stories that you heard?
Well, when they started coming here in the 1990s because of they were now finally allowed to become U.S. citizen after 50 years, I've met in my capacity as an immigration attorney and worker in the community, some veterans like the recognized guerrilla. I remember Magdaleno Duenas. He actually saved 10 Americans from captivity and walked all the way for 1 month to go to Misamis. And that was a story that was never heard. And all he wanted was just a recognition. He passed away and without seeing this day. And then we have Bataan Death March survivors. They tell me their stories about how they were captured, how they were treated, beaten by the Japanese forces.
They were beaten.
Yeah, they
bayoneted,
were really bayoneted, shot.
Some even beheaded.
Yeah, and while they were walking, you know, they were being hit. And then during the Japanese occupation, we have Lourdes Poblete, 93 years old, who we actually awarded the replica bronze of the gold medal. She acted as a spy for the U.S. Armed Forces, pretended to be in that Japanese film. So all the sacrifices, and you know that they actually risked their lives during World War II, was something that should be told. It's something that we have to be thankful for.
Given what you describe and what they endured and their bravery and their loyalty and the sacrifice, why do you think it took so long, not just to get the Congressional Medal of Honor, but to get any kind of recognition and benefits?
I've been asking that question too as an advocate. For many years, we've been advocating for the Equity Bill. In 1946, the Rescission Act, why was it even enacted? Why was this Supplemental Appropriation Act enacted? Then we go back to the legislative history. There was.
And if I could just ask, was that a standalone bill or was it part of something
much
bigger?
It's part of an appropriation bill. It's actually a supplemental mm-hmm. appropriation bill. And then there's this Rescission Act. Oh, by the way, those Filipino veterans will not receive the same veterans as other U.S. Mm-hmm. veterans. It's something like that, which has a serious impact after all these years. Mm-hmm. And then I ask and I look through the legislative history. There's this report that it will take $3 billion for the next 75 years for the U.S. government to provide them with the veterans' benefits. Is it actually the price tag, or there is another issue? Is it also the Asian American racism that was present during World War II? We are all aware, and it's blatant, and we all know about the history of the 120,000 Japanese Americans at that time. So this was the political milieu. And then we cannot say it took long and we didn't do anything. There was a history of legislative bills being introduced. There were like judicial cases filed in court, mm-hmm. did not prosper. We waited until they come here, and that's our in 1990s. We got them in the halls of justice to walk with us and tell their stories in front of legislators.
talking about long overdue recognition for World War II vets, Filipino World War II vets, and my guest this half hour, Lou Tencinco, board president from San Francisco Veterans Equity Center, and Cecilia Garland, executive director of the Bataan Legacy Historical Society. And if you want to call with a question about this or any other Veterans Day-related issue, give us a ring at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Perhaps you have some Filipino vets in your family or friends and coworkers. Give us a ring, or you can email us, of course. It's forum@kqed.org. And, you know, Lieutenant Sinkey, we should point out, too, we're in a moment right now where immigration, legal and illegal, is such a hot ticket, hot potato in our politics. But, you know, this denial of benefits transcends politics in that it was a bipartisan denial, right? I mean, for many, many decades, it was the Democrats who controlled Congress.
Mm-hmm. That's right. But see here, when I was in D.C., on October 25, I saw the bipartisan support. We have Speaker Ryan, and then, of course, we have the Senator Majority Leader, and then we have the Democratic Leader Pelosi. You know, when you see them all in one stage, and then they overcome the the challenges for the common, the partisanship for the common good, I think that is what we need right now, to push more for the immigration benefits also of the children of our Filipino World War II veterans, which is still hanging right now.
How do you think, Cecilia, that this long chapter of history that is now resolved in some ways with the Congressional Medal of Honor, how has it affected the way Filipino Americans, younger generations, think about service to their country, especially military service?
Well, you know, I've come across a lot of people, even, you know, my age, who were born here and say they never knew their history. This is a seminal part of their history, not just Filipino-American history, but U.S. history, because the Philippines didn't gain its independence until 1946. So that's one thing that is sorely lacking in our education. And fortunately, the California Board of Education approved its inclusion in the U.S. history last year. It remains to be implemented. That's why we're working hard to help in its implementation by creating lesson plans that will engage the young adults to participate in civic affairs so that they can become responsible leaders of tomorrow.
Lou, what would you add to that in terms of, you know, enthusiasm for public service in the community? I mean, you know, you agree with Cecilia that there was sort of just a lack of information about the history. And, you know, does that affect the way people think about the military or military service or just service generally?
Yes, because of this lack of information in the history, it actually had affected how probably the prior advocacy had transpired. So with this and with the outreach that we're doing, with the information that we are providing in school, I think the way that they have to look at the veterans would shift a little bit. Mm-hmm. They will probably have to give them importance, and they should never be taken for granted again.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the phone lines again. The number to call, 866-733-6786. And Cheryl in El Sobrante, welcome.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My father was in World War II, and he played a very important role in the freeing of the prisoners in the Los Banos prisoner camp. And he stayed behind enemy lines for 3 months with the Filipinos and working with the Filipino guerrillas. I grew up hearing the stories of how he lived with them, they dug a hole in the floor where he would hide, and they'd put their mat over it and then sit around eating dinner when the Japanese troops would come through to hide him. And, you know, he grew to be very close with the guerrillas, the Filipinos who were fighting behind the scenes. And he radioed all the information about the prisoner camp back to the headquarters that helped to make the plan for the freeing of the prisoners. And the whole campaign was successful in that all the American and Canadian and Australian and other prisoners, there were men, women, children, were all freed. But my father used to tell us that he was really distressed because he felt like they abandoned the Filipinos that he had stayed with and come to know, because the Japanese came in later and just slaughtered the people who were left.
Lou or Cecilia, let me just, either one of you, I mean, to what extent have there been sort of reunions of Filipino vets and American vets, like Cheryl's dad, for example, who met up but maybe lost touch?
A few years ago, I think 2 years ago, we did an event at the Philippine consulate where we both had American and Filipino veterans. And there's a story of this guy, Dan. He's from Connecticut. And he was in the Air Corps in the Philippines. And he was a teenager. And what happened was the U.S. Far East Air Force was destroyed during the first week. And so the Air Corps were put in infantry units.
Yeah.
And so he said he didn't know what he was going through. And so this Filipino told him, "Joe, don't worry, I'll save you." And he was standing next to somebody who belonged to the same regiment that he was referring to.
Yeah. Well, Cheryl, thanks very much for that. Let's go, if we can, quickly. We're short on time, Franz, in Corte Madera, but a quick comment, if you would.
Yes, indeed. My dad was a naval aviator in World War II, and he told me there is no way that we would have won World War II without the Filipino help. Cecilia, mabuhay.
Mabuhay.
I was also in the U.S. Navy during the Cold War and Vietnam era, and I'll tell you flat out, I was always shown the utmost respect and still am friends with Princess de Fajardo's.
All right, Franz, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there, Franz. We're coming up to the bottom of the hour, and this is just a half an hour segment. But thanks so much for checking in. And Lou Tancinco, Cecilia Garland, thank you so much for joining us, sharing the history of your community and of the family. And just quickly, something going on this weekend we should know about, Lou or
yes,
Cecilia?
Yes, in Danville Memorial Veterans Building, we have an exhibition with the USS Hornet. They're presenting the Doolittle Raid.
All right, great. Thank you.
There's going to be a parade, too, if they want to meet Filipino veterans. The contingent is number 44, 11 o'clock.
All right, thank you both so much, Lou Tancinco, Cecilia Garland. Coming up in the next half hour, Lisa Fisher, the vocalist you may remember from 20 Feet from Stardom. She's in town for Alonzo King's Lines Ballet. We'll be talking with her. Stay with us. Here's what's coming up Monday on Forum with Michael Krasny. Ken Holmes worked in the Marin County Coroner's Office for 36 years, starting as a death investigator and ending as elected coroner. He's the subject of a new book titled The Education of a Coroner, Lessons in Investigating Death. And he'll join us on Monday along with author John Bateson. And the Forum team is working on a series about rebuilding after the North Bay fires. What do you want to know about the rebuilding process? Visit kqed.org/forum to share your questions. Stay tuned for a conversation with singer Lisa Fisher. She's back in town for a collaboration with Alonzo King's Lines Ballet.